You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
So, welcome to Activate You. My name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab. I am absolutely thrilled to be with you today again. You know, it's always an opportunity for me to, when I come on here to, really it's cheating, yes? Because in theory, I'm supposed to be inspiring you, the audience, and what I actually do is try and get me inspired. Because I think when you're getting up every day and pushing mountains, you know, out of the way and moving boulders up hills and doing all that kind of stuff, every once in a while, you regularly need someone to feed your tank. And today's guest is somebody who is here to feed my tank, and I hope you enjoy it while she's busy feeding my tank. So I'd like to welcome Dame Clarissa Burt. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
And, you know, honestly, I think you should just Google the chick, because frankly, I could spend the next 35 minutes literally reading out every accolade she's ever had, and we're not going to do that because then we won't get to hear her talk. But suffice it to say, she has had immense numbers of accolades. And, you know, honestly, it's worth you Googling her. And that's my absolute suggestion. We will, of course, give you all links to all of this stuff. But really, why we're here today is because we want to talk about The Self-Esteem Regime, which is your book that came out last year. Now, this is something that, as you all know, I care about greatly, because I'm so tired of women being judged for how they are and how they look, instead of kind of what men are judged for, which is what they do. And I spend my life talking about women being powerful and as powerful as they possibly can be. And one of the pillars of being powerful is actually directly traced back to your self-esteem. So yeah. I would love you to tell me, Clarissa, why did you write this book? What brought it first up for you?
Okay. Yeah.
Do you feel like you struggle with self-esteem? I'd just like to point out.
Did I suffer with self-esteem?
No, you don't look like you ever struggled with it.
Well, I mean, haven't we all? I mean, you know, self-esteem doesn't discriminate whether man, woman, young, old, or anything in between. Self-esteem is something that it's going to hit no matter what. And my self-esteem always manifested with those daily demons. You know, they come in and they always thought they knew better than you what you should be and shouldn't be doing and who you should be and how you should be and what you couldn't be and all the negatives that would come in. So that was one of the first things I had to learn. It was that, first of all, this daily demon was a thing and it really existed. Yeah. The second thing I had to learn was, well, how do I deal with that? You know, how do I deal with that? Why I wrote the book, I think, was really more, you know, again, everything goes back to our childhood, really, doesn't it? And the people that we looked up to. So my mother, beautiful woman. And got married very young out of, you know, 12 years of Catholic nuns. And so you can imagine, you know, already the formation and what it might have felt like to her as an 18-year-old girl. Gets pregnant with me. Oops. And there she goes, black sheep. So mom kind of lived that whole black sheep. I did a bad thing, you know. And so I saw mom be this spectacularly beautiful woman, extremely intelligent. Out of 800 girls in her school, she came in salutarian, which is second under valedictorian. And so extremely bright.
Right.
And mom just never believed in herself. And my mother was like, oh, don't take a picture of me. I always come out big on pictures. And so,
Oh my God, my mother says that.
It was incredible to see. So I was like, mom, gosh, you know, from my perspective, my mother's a beautiful woman and I was so proud of her and whatever else. Grandmother, again, beautiful woman, phenomenal woman. But we go back a generation, don't we? To kind of women are to be seen and not heard, if you will. And grandmom decided one day, beautiful woman, beautiful body, the whole nine yards, had to lose weight, took two diet pills one day, choked on them, perforated her esophagus, and wound up 6 weeks in the hospital. And I kind of thought, well, that was peculiar. You know, my perception, again, being this woman is spectacular. So again, learning from the tribe, moving forward, we learn from those in school. And I knew early on that I wanted a bigger and better mission. So in this, you know, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, I didn't go out into the playground to play with the other children. I was up in the kindergarten helping the teacher, you know, read to the children and mark the papers and that sort of thing. Moving on from that, I didn't join the cliques in high school. I wasn't one of the girls that did. I was one of the girls that, you know, I didn't.
Yeah, you know? I know exactly.
Again, that Catholic upbringing, I didn't. And so, but I wasn't cliquey and I wasn't out there and I wasn't partying. And so I had a different kind of idea as to what I thought being a self-esteemed being was and what a lady really looked like. And so that was my formation. Moving straight on, I then start to work with the most beautiful women on the face of the planet. I am the 1% of beauties. And because I moved into the modeling era in the 1980s. And so came home with, you know, many different magazine covers. I had a kiosk at Bloomingdale's in New York City and worldwide. So I was really, you know, and I walked basically every runway in the 1980s. So that gave me also this perception of all of these beautiful women, these creatures around me that were not happy with themselves. They weren't happy with the way they looked, or they were living in toxic relationships, or they potentially might've been drugged, not all for God's sake, but drugging themselves, or anorexia and bulimia. So what was the correlation between some of the most beautiful women in the world and my grandmother from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, right? And it dawned on me that it was a lack of happy, healthy self-esteem. So the reason I wrote that book is because I perceived so many women, as many of us do perceive others, to be so much bigger, bolder, brighter, and better
than we.
When in reality, all we have to do really is take a stop, take a breath, you know, and ease into the fact that you are as spectacular as everyone else. And I was able to do that through the works of others in the self-esteem section, they'd called it back in the day. In the self-help section.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Now, you know, back in my day, it was one, you know, it was a couple of rows of books. It wasn't much about self-help. If I ever read anything, it was... Today, if I walk into Barnes & Noble, and I'm proud to say my book is in Barnes & Noble, you walk in and there are rows and rows
of personal growth.
Personal growth.
I love that.
Which to me means, okay, great, on all of us, that we want to do better. We want to be a better person tomorrow than we are today.
I agree. I think that that's really the most important thing. One of the things that I noticed when women would come in into Nosh Detox, and they would come in for weight loss, and they were the most beautiful women I'd ever seen. And I was like, so you're going to lose weight by cutting your fingernails? We could cut off your hair. I had no idea where they were meant to lose weight. But what they did was they bought into the concept that you were only validated by being beautiful, young, beautiful, and sexy.
Right.
And everything outside of that really didn't have any validity, because then you were a bitch outside of that. And that was really a problem, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. When you're, and especially if you come through modeling, which is 100% focused on as an idea, what did you first perceive as the ways in which you grew your self-esteem?
After the modeling years, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, there was obviously a difference. You know, people to this day still, it's funny because I sort of, you know, when I'm introduced many times as Clarissa Burt, supermodel, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm 64 years old. I'm not a supermodel. I haven't been one for a very long time. And I thank you for that. And someone brought to my attention, they say, you know, it's almost as though you're kind of ashamed of that. Are you?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, gosh, no, I'm not ashamed of it, because it was a great part of my life, but it's not who I am anymore. And somebody said, well, Buzz Aldrin went to the moon in 1969. But he's now 90 something and he's still considered an astronaut. And I went, all right, what the heck? It's fine. Yes, I accept that. And I'm not certainly ashamed.
I like that as a response.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But what I then, you know, what I wanted to, what I think what I was trying to get across is that, yes, I was, and it was great and it was wonderful, but I've done so much since then. I've done so much in the way of personal growth, business growth, and the like that I don't want it to be, you know, I think the connotation of supermodel put it sort of, it entraps you into that box on the shelf.
Narrow.
And for me, let's go back to saying self-help is not shelf help, right? It's, you know, it's like doing the work. And I've done the work. I've done the work personally. I've done the work with business. And I am so proud of the work that I'm able to do with helping extend a hand to women in need, to women that, you know, and by the way, not only women, as I said, self-esteem doesn't discriminate, but mostly women. And I will tell you that the cover of my book is blue for a reason. When I first got the first iteration back from the publisher, it was, you'll see there are three different blues here, three different colors.
That's true. Yep.
So I got, it was pink, orange, and yellow. And that would have jumped off the shelves phenomenally, right? At Barnes and Noble. And I wrote back and I said, would you kindly do me just one teeny favor on this, but I won't put word into anything else. Of course, I've already written, you know, they've already had pretty much everything I wanted. And they never fought me on anything. I said, can I please have the copy of three iterations of blue? Because if men want to pick up the book, they would be more likely to pick it up if it were blue. And I will tell you that as I was touring Italy in November and December, going and promoting the book, when I was going to the speaking gigs, events that were arranged, I tell you, it was the craziest thing, Gita. Half of the room was men. Half of the room.
So did you assume that women would pick the book up anyway?
Yes.
You needed to appeal to them because you were a woman and they would be interested in finding out more.
Women are going to find it anyway. And the other thing as a mini brag, if I'm allowed, and that is when you go to, you know, Barnes and Noble, you'll see my book is next. It's, you know, there's Tanya Brown. There's Brené Brown, which, you know, has been on Oprah, as I think many, many women in our space know who, you know, Brené Brown is, Deepak Chopra, and Dr. Joe Dispenza. And my book is, right, you know, right in the middle of all that, which is a mini brag, because here I am now, my, you know, with my first book out, in the middle of all of these grand titans of the personal development space. There's much to be said, especially now, in these times, these very uncertain times, politically and economically, socially, where I think there's been, many are feeling destabilized. And I think that if we can really hone in on, you know, our very strong sense of self.
Do you think that destabilization versus because of the pandemic, or is it something else?
I think it is. It's economic. I think it's political. I think it's started-ish with the pandemic. I think it was the first time that, at least in our generation, in our lifetime, not even generation, in our lifetime, my lifetime, that I've ever heard of the word. I heard the pandemic was something you read about in history books. So, you know, for us to be able to, you know, have to be locked down and not to be able to go out and have to wear masks, I think it was quite jarring too on a global scale. So if we were unsure and uncertain of ourselves before, with the new events of these last years, wouldn't you say that there's more destabilization than ever? It's what I'm seeing, it's what I'm hearing, it's what I encounter as I'm out and about talking about self-esteem. And self-esteem is so broad and so wide. You know, people used to say, well, self-esteem is just, you know, don't compare yourself to others. Yes. And
so let's have that. We're just going to go to a break. And then when we come back, I would like you to break down what you see as self-esteem, please, because that would be phenomenal. So we're just going to go on a break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good. Good.
and we're back. What is it that you see? How is it that you see self-esteem? So we're talking about people before the break who are destabilized. And if you are already, like I have this in my home, my son is actually somebody who's had asthma and eczema his whole life and anaphylaxis. So he already has a sense of insecurity and unsafety about the world. The pandemic triggered that. And I don't see how to help him with that. What do you do with people like that who kind of went underground?
Oh, so you said anaphylaxis?
Yeah.
Is it from food, from gluten?
From food.
Really? From gluten, yeah. So funny you should say, about 6-7 years ago, I had been living for such a long time, not understanding why I was living more time in an ambulance and in the emergency room than I should. And I never left a house without either the EpiPen, and that's the truth. And many times when I was out and about, and especially after eating within the hour, I might have what I would call an attack. And it was an attack that turned me into, I think we've all seen Shrek. And so, you know, I was, except for the fact of turning green, I was, you know, obviously having an attack. And it was wheat exercise induced anaphylaxis. And by exercise, it means you might've been walking, you could have been running, whatever it was after eating gluten, working out. And not always. So I wrote a book about, it's called Gluten-Free Gastronomy, Italian Gluten-Free Gastronomy Cookbook. Because as I lived in Italy for 30 years, I was eating pizza and pasta and pane. And there I was having these gluten-free attacks. So it's a great point that you bring up, because self-esteem is also something that or lack of self-esteem is triggered around health and health issues.
And feeling safe.
Absolutely. And so, you know, obviously there, the thing to do with, in my case, with gluten, I had no idea what was going on. I thought it could have been the sulfates in wine. I had no idea what was going on. It was scary. It was so scary because, you know, I had to work. And if I was having these attacks, certainly it would, you know, put a dent in my day. You know, finding out exactly what was going on, and it took nothing more. And I went to doctors, Gita, I can't tell you how many, couldn't figure it out.
Oh, I've done this.
A friend and an internet found it out for me. So with that, I was able to not only understand, but course correct, and make sure that I was staying far away from anything that was containing gluten. And not only I was so happy with my findings that I wrote a book about it, especially for those that love Italian food. So I understand your son better than you think I do.
And so how does one help him with his self-esteem in such an extreme case?
Well, making sure that, you know, obviously knowing that, I think just knowing the foods that he doesn't have to eat anymore. And keeping
that part's under control, but it's the pandemic destabilized him.
Yeah. Well, again, and this is another thing that we have to go down. And yes, I will answer the question. Another thing that I talk about frequently is the idea that our children, according to the CDC, if we want to give credence to the CDC, and many of the other world organizations are coming up with the fact that a good 44% of our children, and I say children in, you know, elementary school, high school, and college years, their children to me anyway, are really suffering in our times more than ever before. And they are suffering in that they have, depression is on the rise, anxiety hugely on the rise, ideation of either, you know, thinking about suicide or having committed suicide. So these are one of the reasons why we as the adults need to have our stuff together and making sure that we are doing the work in order to be able to pass on books much like mine or any others that have to do with personal development, so that they have the tools and the resources in the shed that they need at all times and at any time. One of the things that I say is to be really clear about what your values are. And everyone's value system is different. And for me, a lot of times it's just being honest, getting radically honest with yourself and with others, because you're really only as good as the word that you've given to others. And I think that when you're taking care of yourself in that same regard, being really honest with yourself about who you are and what you want is really, really, really important. Integrity. This is, by the way, taking the high road. So honesty is H, I is integrity. And those are your moral principles. It's your moral standing, your uprightness, right? You know, you don't have to live the way everyone else is living. You're going to live in your own integrity. What does that mean to you? And down, being really clear about it. The G is gratitude, living in gratitude for the even the littlest things that you have. There's not a day that I don't wake up and I say, I thank God for a roof over my head. I thank for a warm blanket. I thank for a comfortable. I thank food for food in the pantry. I thank for all the new fun things. I just started for the first time in my life sprouting grains. Oh my God.
You do feel such a sense of achievement, right?
Oh my, yeah, the littlest things, you know. So I got the alfalfa sprouts and we're on day two now, and I'll be damned if those things aren't sprouting. And it's the fun things like that, finding little things that you're curious about, and finding the wonder that is all around us. And you will find that in nature, and I'm finding it right now in a ball glass jar and a strainer with alfalfa sprouts. As silly as that may sound, it's just the coolest damn thing to watch those, that, you know, these little things sprout. And I do many, many things like that. Finding your talent is and being unendingly curious about what is, I think, is one of the greatest gifts in gratitude that we can give ourselves. And then honor, who are you when nobody else is in the room?
Yeah,
you know, where are you when you're? I'll tell you a real quick story about honor. I was on Celebrity Survivor. And I was on Celebrity Survivor 10 years ago. And very quickly, we were on a mission and we were.
What is Celebrity Survivor? Sorry, for the British audience.
Do you know Survivor, the show Survivor?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. So when they put you in the middle and you've got
to go. Exactly. So I was on Survivor and we had an exercise where we had to go up in a helicopter and the two pretty girls.
I think that's very brave of you.
The young bikini girls that were absolutely gorgeous, they came in the helicopter with me. So they had coerced the pilot to go into the little hut in Nicaragua and buy us some food because we were starving. I mean, you really do starve. So anyway, long story short, as they came back out and he handed them the brown paper bag and they got in the back and they started eating and I felt this tap on my shoulder. And I looked around and they were handing me some of the food, which was an extremely kind gesture. Now, I'm not trying to sound like, you know, whatever, but I declined the food, and I declined the food with a smile and a thank you. And I did that because I knew that there were rules to the game and that if I had eaten that food, I was being dishonest and that I would have a leg up on the others that hadn't had the chance to have a couple morsels or a couple bites of that candy bar, a few of those chips. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but who are you when nobody else is in the room? When you have that kind of, I think that moral, you know, fortitude, if you will, it really boosts your self-esteem. So these are some of the tools that I would say are paramount to living in happy, healthy self-esteem. The other thing that I like to say is we're always talking and hearing about people saying, "I am enough. She is enough. We are enough."
Oh,
you
God.
Know, that, I'm, yeah, I know. Well, when you look up enough, it's only as much as is required.
Yeah.
Now, like I don't know about you, or I do know about you, and I know about me, and I know that I am so much more than enough. I am so much more than enough. And that is what I impart on everyone that I talk. You are so much more than enough.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't understand I'm enough. I've never quite got that. Why would that be a good thing? It's never like resilience. I freaking hate resilience.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So again, no bar to threshold of entry. Yes.
So let me say it enough. Again, enough is only as much as is required. Required by whom? Right? Required by what? By whose standards? Right? So I am so much more than enough. I am so much more than whatever the hell you're all talking about. And then you don't say that. It's not to be cocky, and it certainly isn't conceit. It's just, it's a good stance on.
I don't think it's conceit. No, I think it's really vitally important. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a good stance. Yeah. It's a good stance on self-confidence.
I think that's also really interesting because I'm always talking about power. I'm always talking about the fact that I grew up very wealthy and I was privileged enough to lose after my last divorce, everything and end up penniless with three kids. And we were homeless. And I always say it was a privilege and an honor because, not because I like being poor, because I infinitely prefer being rich. I've tried it and I assure you being rich is way better.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan. But there's a place where massive fan, just saying, hashtag.
That's brilliant.
I'm just saying that for me, what
I... Oh my God, I love you. You are my new best friend. We're going to hang out forever, you and I. I love your energy.
The thing about poverty is that it's a perceived weakness, which enables you to clearly understand what you will and won't say yes to, what you will and won't say no to. Yep. And once you've got to the place where you know, like I know very clearly the things I will and won't do for money. And there are things that I wished I could do for money that I will, I'm unable to.
Of course.
You know, I'm absolutely unable to. And it's really interesting watching my daughters make the same choices. And I had a friend, because my daughters are mixed children, and you know how mixed kids can either be look like monkeys or really beautiful.
Gorgeous.
And happily, they are still monkeys, but beautiful ones. And they, somebody said, I find it really interesting that your daughters won't go out and date really wealthy men because of how beautiful they are. And firstly, that's offensive. Secondly, my children would never think that that was a barometer by which to judge someone.
Of course.
And so I feel that makes me feel like a good mother, even when they hate me. So I kind of hang on to that as a thought, because it's really interesting. Know yourself to such a degree that even when you have nothing, you still know the things. Those are your core values.
Yes, of course, the core values. Also, in that case, you know, in relationships and breakups and grieving a relationship, just know that, you know, you're never going to be good enough for the wrong person. You know, so that's something I think that we really need, as women especially, need to hold on to. And
well,
that
they should all go shag themselves, because I feel like only being good enough for me, or not even that. I feel I don't understand that. I have to say, okay, let's go for another break, and when we come back, we can down more on being enough, because there's a stupid message if I ever heard one. So we're going to go on a break.
Yeah. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back. And the thing is that I think that you can't be loyal to someone else if you're not willing to be loyal to yourself.
That's exactly right.
I think that you will be mean about other people because your inner self-talk is
exactly it.
Frigging toxic. And right. I really love the concept that we have this like karma in my culture, is the concept that you do what you get done to you what you did. So what you put out, you put back. And in my spiritual lexicon of understanding, it's the vibration I'm at. So if I'm at a shitty vibration, shitty things are going to happen to me. And if I try and raise myself out of that vibration, better things happen. You know, and so I like that. That's what you seem to be saying, although obviously more eloquently, but basically, and less swear words.
It's kind of along the lines of worrying is praying for what you do not want, right?
Right. I remember hearing Oprah saying that every at the beginning of every year, she would say, "Okay, God, I want more love," and then she got such shitty experiences. She was forced to learn how to love. Then there was another one, and she said, after a while, she just stopped asking because it was so dangerous. Because every time she asked for something, she got the opposite to learn
That's
how to.
Exactly right. Yeah. Another thing that I like to say, and this is it has something to do a little bit with self-esteem as well, and that is, you know, people are always along the lines of, you know, I am enough, we are enough, everybody is enough, and that is, I can do anything. I can do, you can't, because I'm not going to be called by NASA tomorrow and be on the moon next week, so that's probably not going to happen.
Well, if you just find yourself a nice billionaire boyfriend, or
we're working on that.
And instead of world hunger, you were like, I will just get
we're working on that.
It'll take me to Mars, you know, then, you know, there is that.
But so there's a concept that, you know, you can do anything. Well, I'm going to add to that and say, you can do anything until you can't. And what are the things that you may not be able to do? And I always go right to make amends. can you really make amends once it's too late, once someone is gone? And so I think one of the other arms that I love to talk about in self-esteem is, you know, doing the right thing and making the first moves, even though it might mean, you know, eating some crow, or it might mean being uncomfortable, or it might mean, you know, they might reject me. But I've seen so many relationships fall by the wayside, and especially in families. If somebody had just said, I'm sorry, it would have changed things dramatically. And meant I'm sorry, and opened that dialogue,
and not I'm sorry if you were that you were upset by that.
Right, exactly. Not I'm sorry if you were upset by that.
Slap me down.
And going in and really meaning, of course, yeah. Going in and really meaning, I'm sorry, and I miss you, and can we talk about this? And not wanting to be a right rider, you know, not wanting. You don't have to make it right. You just have to make it better than it is. And maybe, you know, the idea of being able to, you know, be at Thanksgiving dinner, or I'll see you next Christmas, whatever it may be in your life. But there's going to come a day when you can't do anything. And then you might potentially be very sorry that. And the regret is a horrible thing to live in or live with.
Yeah, I grew up as a good Indian child. And in my good Indian childness, atonement was supposed to be kind of right up there with teeth brushing.
And it doesn't always work.
What am I atoning for? I'm atoning for all this crap that I didn't know. My job was to smile and be intelligent and whatever. And so I'm not a fan of atonement. I'm a fan. I'm listening to you and I agree with you, but I'm also understanding that I haven't quite thought this, that when somebody's done wrong to me, I want to tell them now, or I walk away and I'm like, we're done. And when I've done wrong to someone, my instinct is to go, you know what? I really screwed up. I'm so sorry. But then there comes that place in a relationship where somehow having your interpersonal parts get involved makes your brain unable for you to take responsibility for your shit, right? And that's when you can't say sorry.
Yes doesn't always mean yes. No doesn't always mean no. And done doesn't always mean done. Sometimes you need to stay away from something, give it the place and the space that it needs, you know, the time that you may want to think things through, and then try to get the emotionality out of it and put in the practicality of what, you know, what really did happen and how did it happen. Were my emotions that took over? And this has happened to me. And I think that, again, wanting to be a better person tomorrow than I am today leaves, again, a place and a space for that aperture to be able to walk in and say, I'm going to take the risk. And I want to take that risk because I do want to take a high road. And when I go back to talking about taking the high road, we go back to what I said to you before, which is honesty, integrity, gratitude, and honor. So I've done an honest thing with myself. I've lived in integrity. I'm the gratitude for the relationship and the space I've created for it, and the honor because I know that I am doing what will honor me, and I will honor them by at least trying to do the right thing.
I also just don't see how saying sorry diminishes you. I think it, in my mind, it aggrandizes you. I don't know what that is in English.
Absolutely.
It grows you in my mind, you know, not apologizes, not diminishes you. I think that makes a massive difference. But I also think the only person that you can ever control is yourself. And that it is so much for you to be able to live within yourself, because fear is the most powerless emotion. And so we'll go from fear to anger to feel more powerful. And instead of going to anger, if you could give up the fear, life would shift so much more, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think that, well said, absolutely well said. But again, you know, the idea of I can do anything, well, do it while you can. Get out there, stay motivated, stay inspired, you know, and if you have, you know, a lot of times there have been times in my life where I've just put things up on, silly to say, a vision board, make the lists, you know, what is it that I really want to accomplish in my life? And what I wanted to accomplish in this time around, I knew that some of the difficulties that I had in my childhood and growing up, because I grew up in a very, you know, kind of a difficult household, if you will, with violence and alcoholism and that sort of thing, was that I wanted to, for women mostly, I want to shake, I just want to walk onto them and shake them alive. Like, you know, you are so much more than you think you are. So can we work on that? You know, here's go. I don't have to be my book, but just please work on that. You know,
thank you. And I think also let's start with Dame Clarissa Burt's book, because there's a bloody good place to start. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a look at The Self-Esteem Regime, guys. It's out and you can get it in, you can get it around
Amazon
the world.
Amazon UK.
Yeah.
It's on pretty much anywhere, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Amazon across the world. And so if you are listening, if you would like a different take on this, then taking the high road sounds like a good thing to do. It sounds great. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. We'll put all the details for how to find you in the book at the bottom of the show and in the show notes. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you again.
It's my pleasure. So I hope you guys were inspired by that. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And that, you know, there's something that came out of that. You think, I don't know about that. I love the I don't know about that. Because when you don't know about something, at least you're going to have that conversation. And frankly, that's all I want. I want you to think about it, unpack that box, think about that stuff, and then think, do I still want to feel like this? Do I want to feel different? How do I want to feel? Because you're the only person that can ever make that choice. So this is called Activate Yourself. My name is Geeta Sidhu Rob, and I thank you so much for joining me again. We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.